Hello and welcome to Magic Mike's, where if you lose, you get nothing. This is episode 11, Fighting, from 2009. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
I'm Joe Two. Spend $30,000 on freemium phone games. It's time for Magic Mike's.
If you win one fight, you could just, you know, get a lot of, you could splash the pot in the freemium phone games all you want.
So Adam had sent me an article today, and it was about this guy who was like, I installed Final Fantasy phone game. I don't even know what it is.
Yeah.
And it was like this long story about how he had spent, over the course of the past year, $15,000 and, you know, countless hours on the Final Fantasy game. And he's like, and I got to the point where, like, I realized, like, I was just buying these fucking sprites on the game, you know?
Yeah.
And it was just, but it was, like, a long, slow haul. And, you know, I wasted all this time that I could have been spending on my kids and, like, and, like, I could have spent this money for vacation. And he's, like, in debt now and stuff like this.
Yeah.
So, like, I was thinking about that today. We're sitting there eating some food. Rachel and I are sitting there eating some food, and she's like, man, this girl is saying that her husband spent $30,000 on a phone game.
Right.
And I'm like, what? And she's like, yeah, he was playing like the Game of Thrones game on his phone and spent $30,000 on it. Now it's like they had just bought a house and have a child. I was like, this story sounds so familiar. And I was like very confused when she told me, because I thought she was telling me of that story, but she wasn't. This is just two separate instances today that have crossed my life.
Well, there are people. Here's my take on the in-game purchases. I've never done it that I wasn't reimbursed for one reason or another.
Like what? Like for work?
Yeah.
Like a trial?
Okay. Mm-hmm. It makes the game so much more fun. So I can absolutely see why people, like Madden Ultimate Team and FIFA Ultimate Team, like when you just pay to get better players, it's so much fun.
You know what? Now that you say that, I think that like when I would play FIFA Ultimate Team,
yeah,
I would definitely drop like $10 like as soon as I got it. Like give me some players that I can sell and trade and,
yep,
and just to get there. Yeah.
The way that it works though is that like you say you spend $10 or $20 or $50 or whatever, you get a bunch of good players. You put the ones that you want in your lineup, and then there's the ones that you don't use or can't use or don't fit in your scheme or whatever, and you sell those. But you say you get like 90 cents on the dollar, right? But then you have,
yeah,
you still have like a bunch more money that you can spend in the game that you like you sold those guys for, so you buy more packs and you get more good players. But then you keep selling those and you keep getting down, and eventually you're at the place where you have a good team, but there's nothing else you can, like, you can't wheel or deal anymore. And so to like reach that high, you have to go and just
buy
more packs, and that's where it keeps going. I mean, there are people, like, I think in the Middle East, like, these, like, princes or sultans or something, who, like, spend, like, $1 million a year on FIFA. I mean, they can because they can, but there are people that are, like, way into this, and I don't get it.
Yeah, so what my one friend used to do is, like, never mind, we're gonna go way down this hole, so... That was enough of the phone game talk.
But yes, you know, spend $30,000 on freemium phone games, because you can get $30,000 for a fight or even $100,000 for a fight. Or if you bet on yourself, you know, against what people think you're going to do, you can even get $1 million. Just spend that money on phone games. Why not?
Yeah, fucking let it ride.
So before we talk about fighting, there is no guest in this episode. It's just me and Joe, the good old days, the good old boys. Got a couple pieces of business cover off the top. So here's some good news and some bad news. It's the same news, two angles, two lenses. Joe and I are going through some tricky scheduling times. We've also noticed that Too Fast, Too Forever is really picking up steam, and we want to focus on that. So what we have decided, we don't want to end Magic Mike's, because we love this. We love chanting.
Word.
We spent all that money on those stickers that we talked about a couple episodes ago. We are going to drop this down to once every 3 months. This and Boyfriend Trailer, we'll talk about that on that show, but we're going to do this every 3 months. So the bad news is that there's going to be less of this. The good news is that each episode that we do is going to feel like more of an event, I think.
I think so.
That it's going to be like, oh, here's our old buddy Channing back again. What kind of wacky antics is he up to?
Yes.
And also, you know, we can do more bonus episodes this way. Like, as we record this, Smallfoot is in theaters now. I have not seen it yet.
Yep.
Don't know if I'm going to see it in theaters. I might just wait for it to be on demand and watch it then, and we do an episode. But like when stuff like that comes out, we can just pencil that in and do it without feeling pressured to be like, oh, to do a fourth or fifth episode this month.
Word. Exactly.
We talked a lot about a lot of different options.
It was a fucking whirlwind.
It was a whirlwind.
Trust me.
We've had such fun here the first 10 plus episodes now. And, you know, we've nominated so many things. And, like, there's really so many great Channing movies that I'm looking forward to talking about. We're going to drop it down a little bit. Sound off, though. If you're upset about this, you know, we have an email address, magicmikes@cageclub.me. No email again tonight. That's a couple episodes in a row with no email, which is another reason why, you know, we have people writing into two... Like, not, I'm not trying to guilt you into writing, but even the, like
I am
any more
I
than
am.
I mean any more than we do on a normal episode. You know what I mean? Like
yeah.
We beg for emails all the time. You know, people are writing like people have for whatever reason, maybe because they love the movies, maybe they love our banter, maybe it works better for that kind of audience. But people seem to click with Too Fast, Too Forever. I don't want to end. We don't want to end Magic Mike's. But we're going to, you know, dial it back a little bit, keep it going.
Pivot.
Yeah.
Divert attention.
Or, like, you know, like in a dance, to put it in chanting moves, do a little, like, half step, like a shuffle to the side.
Yeah. Pirouette.
We're not going to stop this. It's going to be a little bit less frequent. So at least 4 episodes a year, you know, if schedules ease up, maybe we'll come back. But as of right now, in 3 months, so it'll be January 11th as you hear this, we'll have our next episode out, which is... Dun-dun-dun-dun... Public Enemies, which is a movie that I have not seen, which is, I think, a Johnny Depp gangster movie, maybe?
Is it that one? Is it? Okay, maybe.
I think. I don't know. And we'll play guessing game at the end.
Channing was in a movie with Johnny Depp?
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, so we'll be back in January. But, you know, if just email us, you know, if you look forward to this on the 11th of the month. Yeah, exactly.
If you don't like this idea, whatever you feel like, let us know.
We're not monsters.
No.
We're not going to make you upset, but you haven't been writing
in.
Although
it's almost Halloween.
And I don't want to, you know, really beg you to write in, but, you know, write in. So that's that. So we do have an email address, like I said, magicmikes@cageclub.me. Write in, let us know what you think. The only other thing we want to talk about before we get into the actual discussion
Tatum Tots.
So here's the thing, Joe. There's a site, I think it's Gossip Cop. There's some site, I'm sure there's a bunch of these sites, but there's one site that I've seen a couple times lately on my Google Alerts. And they're sites that take a internet rumor and they rate it on a scale of fact to fiction.
It's like Snopes for gossip.
Exactly. That's a perfect way of saying it.
Okay.
So there was one that I saw, not related to this podcast, but related to our network, where it was talking about are Keanu Reeves and Angelina Jolie dating? Apparently 100% fiction. But this is something that, you know, getting a daily Google alert about Keanu Reeves, I saw for 5 or 6 days in a row. Like, it was just like, are they together? Are they together? All this different stuff. Turns out, not true. Same site, different email. Are Channing Tatum and Jenna Dewan back together?
Uh-oh. No
100%
way.
Fiction. Not 0% chance.
I was going to be like, what the fuck have I missed in the past couple of days?
No,
but,
no.
Yeah.
You've missed nothing because nothing has happened. What I am excited about, though, and we will, you know, maybe we'll do like a check-in on social media. We're at you know, facebook.com/cageclub and at cageclubpod on Twitter. Channing, the last couple of years, Channing and Jenna and Everly have always gone ham in their Halloween costumes. So obviously we're a little bit early in the month for that, but I am looking forward to see if they still do like a family costume, if he's not in the picture, if she's not in the picture. Interesting dynamics. I want to see how that shakes out a little bit later
this
month.
How they co-parent. Yeah.
Do you know Tatum Tots? I mean, we said, you know, Smallfoot is in theaters now. Getting pretty good reviews. I think it's fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. Not that that necessarily means a lot. I feel like animated movies, like kids' movies, could go really like one of two very different ways. It seems like it's pretty good.
So I have a Tatum Tot that relates to that.
Okay.
It's Tatum Tot. It's a cute one. Channing Tatum and his daughter Everly have a dance-off every day.
Oh, I saw that. I didn't read the article, but yes, I saw that. That's great.
So Channing says that they do dance-offs almost every day at some point.
Yep.
Everly obviously has great dance moves. Wink at her mom.
And her dad.
And her dad, for that matter, yeah. Later in the article, he talks about, you know, did she like Smallfoot? And he's like, well, she gets it about 70%. But there's a scene, spoilers for Smallfoot.
Okay.
There's a scene where he gets tranquilizer darted, and he was like, she did not like that.
Oh,
like, she knows it's not Channing, but, like, she also knows it is. So she was like, not about that life.
I think that's even maybe in the trailer. Like, I watched part of the trailer in theater, so I'm like, this is not a movie that I'm going to need, like, spoiled for me, or not spoiled for me, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
And I think it's all about this guy finds these Yetis, and then I think he tranks Channing and brings them back to his people, fish out of water type of situation. I don't know if it's the whole movie or part of the movie or what, but I think even that part is in the trailer, so it's a key plot element.
It's,
yeah.
It's like childhood Shape of Water.
God, I hope not, but maybe. It's probably best just to lose that thread altogether.
Yeah, you knew where I was going with that. You just put the pieces together in your head.
So here we are talking about Fighting, a movie from 2009. Now, Joe, we had talked about when you were watching it, you said that you were shouting and shouting and shouting. So what excited to you about this movie? What excited you about this movie?
God. This was a movie that I don't even know existed.
I have a little bit of something which I completely forgot about, and I'm guessing you forgot about, but I want to hear the rest of what you say before I resurface this. We'll see in a second.
Okay. I didn't know what this movie was about at all. I didn't know it existed.
Yep.
And we get into the movie, and in, like, the first, the very, very beginning, you see Channing, he's, like, trying to schlep fucking, like, fake Harry Potter books.
And iPods, yeah.
And iPods.
Harry Potter versus the hippopotamus.
Which, this is very Twinkie, by the way. Just,
oh, yeah.
A little shout out to Too Fast, Too Forever. He's essentially playing Twinkie
sure.
here. Okay, so he's doing that, and then this kid walks by, and I see him, like, standing there, and I'm like, why does this kid look familiar?
Right.
And I'm like watching it and I'm like, I swear I've seen him in something not too long ago. And I realize it's Ragazzi, A Guide to Recognizing Your Saints. Mm-hmm. He's like the bully kid.
Yeah.
Okay. So I see him and I'm like, oh shit.
Is that Terrence Howard's sort of boy in the beginning?
Yeah. That's okay. Terrence Howard's yeah. like main fighter, I think, or just right. like one of his boys that like hangs out with him
or his
something.
Goon or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, I'm like, oh, shit. Instantly into a Channing fight, and I'm like, okay, cool. This movie yep. is about fighting, yep. you know. What, this could have been about anything. You know how these titles
go. We were sold a bill of goods, and it delivered.
Yeah, and it delivered. Like, fight, first 30 seconds, Channing is fighting. And they set it up that he's going to be, like, fighting the whole time. Do you want to interject your thing now?
Okay, so did you know that what? There are 6 actors, including Channing, from A Guide to Recognizing Your Saints?
In this? No way.
Do you know
so, okay,
why?
Okay, so I got 2. That's what I was going to say. And then we get to the next part, and I see Brandon, who's the kid from Sopranos, who was the dog walker from A Guide to Recognizing Your Saints.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, shit, there's 2 of them.
Yep.
But I don't know who the rest are. No.
I don't know either, but the reason that they're in there is because this is, once again, directed by Dino Montiel, the guy who directed Ragazzi.
Okay.
And I completely forgot that, but then I remembered that when Mike was on talking about Ragazzi with us, resident historian Mike Manzi.
Yeah.
He had mentioned to us this movie that Dino had directed Channing in another movie. I don't remember if he had seen it or not, but after I saw that he directed
this
movie,
familiar.
I was like, oh, right, Mike told us this, but we just completely forgot it. And so that's why there's so many of the same actors, because the guy's like, I know what I like, I know what I want, I know who sort of fits my style, I'm going to bring them back in. Because this is only 3 years later, you know what I mean? Like, it's the same...
It's 3 years later,
and it's
the same setting.
Yeah, exactly.
I was assuming that either, like, the writer or producer or director was involved with both.
Yeah.
I never looked it up, because I always let you do
yep.
the trivia stuffs. But, like, when I saw 3 characters from that movie, and I was like, oh, this is around the same time period, like,
yeah.
I was like, they had to just, you know, it
yep.
had to be somebody mm-hmm. related to the other film, so...
So here's my thing about this. We were talking a lot before, not really a lot, but we talked a little bit about the movie before we started recording, and we both agreed that we liked this movie, but it's not very
it.
Good.
But I don't think anybody would say that this movie is good if you weren't a Channing fan and a fan looking for the stuff that we look for
right.
in movies.
Yes. And here's my thing. Here's why I think Ragazzi is, like, great, like a good movie and also great, and why this movie is not a good movie but is enjoyable, is because Dino, the director, Dino Montiel, Ragazzi was sort of an autobiography, like Shia was him
yeah.
as a young boy, Robert
yeah.
Downey as an adult. He feels entirely comfortable in these 2 movies just being about the feel of a place. You know what I mean? Like, it's not
really
about...
He delivers the feel of New York City a lot.
Yes.
Like, really well. Even for time periods that we're not so familiar with,
yep.
I've spent enough time in and around New York City and Manhattan to know the feel of it.
Right.
So, like, he has the streets on lock, like, for serious.
Exactly. And I think what works about A Guide to Recognizing Your Saints, the movie's not really about anything. It's about kids in a summer just kind of coming of age and, like, the shit that they
yeah.
get into. This movie has a plot of some kind.
It does.
That he just has no interest in, like, explaining or developing or working on. It's like, okay, Terrence Howard finds Channing because he sees him fight. He's going to bring him this, like, underground rule of, like, or underground
fight
world
club.
Of fighting. But, like, how does it work? We don't know. Like, do they have to pay money to get in? We don't know. Like, how does Terrence Howard make money? We don't know. And it's just like, the movie's basically saying, yeah, but don't worry about that kind of stuff, which I'm okay with, which is why I liked it. But I feel like when you have so much plot and so much story,
you
and
need to
so
answer
much,
something.
You need to, like, yeah, you need to have, like, sort of, like, have rules for your world. It's just like, oh, we're just showing up, and, like, there's, like, these guys that all, like, know each other from, like, their backstories, like the guy that wrestled with Channing in Alabama.
Yeah.
The older, you know, the slick, the rich guys that, like, can, like, keep putting these guys in, like, putting Channing in
yeah,
fights.
They're kind of... They have to be like investment bankers or something,
but like,
right?
We don't know. Yeah, because the movie's just like, hey, you get a sense of who these guys are, which, yes, we do, just based on their look and the way they act, the way they talk.
Aren't they very Patrick Bateman? They're like very Patrick Bateman.
Exactly.
Me.
And like, it kind of feels like, did you see Game Night?
Yes.
So remember at the end of Game Night where maybe the Billy Magnussen role, the Ryan, like the guy who's dating the older woman. Anyway, it feels like in that movie, the one character keeps talking about how like, in this, like, he's like, he keeps hearing these stories about, like, on NPR or whatever, about how rich people have underground fight clubs, and people are like, that's ridiculous. And then they show up to that house, like, the mansion at the end, and, like, there's an underground fight club. You know what I mean? Like, it's not
crucial
to the story, but it sort of feels like here, like, if we had heard or seen or whatever, they're like, oh, yeah, this is, like, all you need is, like, a sentence. Like, Terrence Howard is like, look, all these people, you know, have more money than they know what to do with, and they just want to see poor kids fight. And, like, you kind of get that sense, but, like, there's no actual explanation.
This movie really felt like you could have at any point replaced Channing and the kid from Brick, by the way, Brad Bramish from Brick. Sorry, I don't know his real name. You could have replaced him and Channing with dogs at any point in this movie, and it would have been the exact same movie.
Oh, yeah. Wow, yeah.
This is just a dogfighting movie that they were just like, okay, we're just going to put people in instead.
Yeah.
You like that?
I do like that. The actor is apparently Brian White is the guy who plays Brad Bramish.
Yeah.
He's been in, I forgot he was in The Cabin in the Woods, and he's also in The Game Plan with The Rock, so he might be making an appearance someplace down the road on Too Fast, Too Forever on a pit stop. That absolutely feels like, because, like, what's even super weird is that, like, the second fight, right, so the first fight, it's him against, like, this Russian kid, right, and it sort of feels,
oh, no, we're not counting the street fight first?
Well, the first official fight, so the street fight is the first fight, but then the first official fight is him against the Russian kid.
It's like a Knights of Columbus kind of, like, fire hall type situation.
Yeah,
this
exactly.
One? Okay.
No, it's a church.
Okay, yeah, okay.
But
cool.
It has that, like, Elks Lodge kind of feel, but, like, they're like, yeah, we're fighting in the church. I was like, that's weird. He shows up. He fights the Russian kid, and the kid's kicking the shit out of him, and then Channing, with the wrestling background, sort of, like, bum-rushes him and cracks the kid's skull on a ceramic water fountain, and the kid dies or gets knocked out? Like, who knows what happens, but Channing wins. And Terrence Howard's like, I told you he could fight. And we're like, no, he couldn't fight. He kind of had, like, a cheap shot, like a dirty blow, but, like, in this apparently world, there are no rules.
Yeah, that's what... Yeah, there is no... Apparently, there's no fighting rules.
No.
This, yeah.
Fight Club has very basic rules, but they make sense. You know, like, no shoes, no shirt, two guys to a fight, one fight at a time. This is just like, hey, man, just do whatever. It's just like, oh, okay.
Yeah, when they start, like, using terrain and shit, I'm like, are you allowed to use a chair?
Right.
Like, what if we just, like, laid bats all over the ground? Like, would
that
be illegal or not?
So this is why I think your idea of dogfighting makes sense, because it feels like Channing just keeps showing up to these places, walks in a room, takes his shirt off, just down to his wife beater, and then just fights. Like, there's no downtime. It's like, he's there. It's sort of like the dog. Like, you bring the dog into the room, the dog sees the other dog and just fight. Like, that sort of makes sense. But it feels like that way through the entire thing. But the weirdest one is that second one, which is sort of in the backyard patio section of, like, that bodega.
When he's fighting a huge guy.
And Channing walks out there, and it's like this guy has been staring at this door, waiting to see Channing Tatum, because as soon as Channing goes outside, looks up, this guy starts taking off his jewelry and walking down, no words spoken, and then they fight. And it's like, what is happening?
Yeah, like, there's nobody... And, like, when were all the bets placed?
I don't know. I guess ahead of time, but, like, without seeing Channing? Like, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, there's... Yeah.
And, like, what's crazy about that fight, too, is that, like, he's not his friend, but, like, another guy in his posse, you know, the guy's choke-holding Channing and about to, like, make him pass out, and the kid kicks the dude in the back, and then all hell breaks loose, and there's just a woman in the crowd who gets her drink spilled, who shoots and hits one of the guys in the posse's, like, ear. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, what has happened? Like, there's literally no rules, and yet, like, these fights are for, like, $10,000 or $30,000 or $100,000. Like, how is there such organization and absolutely no organization at the same time?
Yeah, and I was confused. It's like, how would the... So the last fight kind of makes sense. The church hall one kind of makes sense. But the alley one, it's like, how would you convince investment bankers that are spending all the money on the fights to, like, show up here?
Yeah, like, and be like, not only just show up there, but, like, walk through the bodega and get stared at by, like, the meanest, like, you know, street girls that are just, like, wanna fuck you up. You know what I mean? Like, they're all, like you can't walk through there without feeling bad about yourself.
I did think of Island when I was watching that part. Because when the kid walked up and was like, smile, beautiful, or something like that, I was like, oh, God, that's so horrible.
Yeah.
It was really cringy. Rachel always comments on, like, that she hates the the smile.
Yeah.
When a guy tells a girl to smile, that's like one of her biggest pet peeves.
Yeah.
And when I saw that, I was like, it is very New Yorker to do. Not only is this, is it never right in any situation? This was the worst situation.
Not right here. Yeah.
Like, yeah, so I got a nice chuckle out of that one.
Shout out Iceland from our last episode of Stop Loss, who will also be on our next episode of Boyfriend Material out in 10 days. She'll be talking about Crazy Stupid Love, so check that out there. And she's also on Too Fast, Too Forever. The weirdest fight, though, of the four organized fights is that third one, where it's him against the Asian dude who sort of looks like he stepped out of the raid, right? They're fighting in front of a group of, like, six people? Like, who's in the room?
It's Japanese whales. You know, gambling whales, is what I was assuming
it was. I feel like there's just not enough people there to stage a $30,000 fight, but maybe that's
the
point?
No, you're thinking the wrong way.
Okay.
Like, there's definitely enough money there for them to pay a $30,000 fight. Do you know this whole culture in Vegas that there's, like, these guys that they fly in from Japan and they just, like, give them everything because they come and just gamble, like, a ton of money?
Oh, yeah. I've heard about this. And I think they even, like, reference it in, like, the Ocean's movies, I think. Like, there's just...
Exactly.
You know, they know the people who are just going to spend lots of money because it's, like, you know, just a weekend away that, like, instead of you and me going to, like, a hockey game and spending $100 on, like, just beer, they're going to come and spend $30,000 on whatever.
It's usually much more than that. To the point where, like, Vegas will, like, private jet them to Vegas. You know what I mean? Like, a casino will, like, comp... Like, they live a completely different world in Vegas than either you or I would ever see.
Right,
you
and comp everything just because they're going to spend it everywhere else. Yep. But, yeah, so I guess that makes sense, but it just feels like... There's no rhyme or reason to why these are the fights. You know what I mean? Like, there's no...
On this note that you're saying this, the movie really felt like, and just feel me out for a second, that this was kind of like his new age twist on Game of Death.
Okay.
And Channing is just, like, fighting up the ladder. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
This is exactly what it is, like, from, like, the bottom to the top, that he just has to keep battling one boss who's... a little bit better than the last one,
sure.
To come to the final fight.
Yeah.
And that's what he's getting to.
Yeah. I just wish that there was more, like, literally anything explained. Like, when you really early on see the guy who's, like, a boxer, right? Like, the guy he ultimately fights at the end, the guy from...
Yeah.
Brad Bramish from Brick. You sort of know, just because you've seen movies before, that, like, oh, Channing's gonna fight this guy at the end of the movie. But there's no real reason why that would ever happen. Like, they don't run in the same
circles. Well, no, they do. They do tell you the reason why it would happen at the end, but, like, they tell you it right before the fight.
Which is what?
That he was a wrestler, too, came here, started fighting, but he was an underground fighter, but then he eventually, like, went pro and became a boxer.
Right, so it does feel like he's stepping down to fight Channing, right? Like, this isn't, like...
But ultimately, he would, because of the whole backstory with Channing's dad raising him. Like, you wouldn't... The link is made, but, like, really close to the end of the fight. Like, I see your point where, like, you were lost up until the end, but, like, once you get to right before the fight and she's like, oh, shit, you know, Channing's dad was raising this kid, or, like, training this kid, too, and then now that this is why he'll step down.
Because Channing and his dad have, like, a falling out. Like, Channing fought his dad, and, like, there's a whole backstory there. Maybe that's my problem. Maybe it's not that we don't learn things, but it's that we don't learn things until the last 10 minutes. The fact that Zulai... or Zule, or however, because her name is mispronounced by, like, everybody in this movie, the girl that Channing has a crush on, who he low-key stalks the entire time, which I also was like, that's
creepy.
Not okay. But she's also into it because it's a movie? I don't know. She's had this relationship with Terrence Howard, which we have no hints of until the end of the movie when Channing finds out.
But it's not, like, a relationship.
No, but she's, like, she knows him, and the relationship is that she makes bets for him, which they were keeping it a secret from Channing for what reason? Like, they sort of explain it, but, like, it's not a good reason.
So they didn't let anybody know because they go and party at the club that she works at afterwards. She has to be, like, close enough that they can place bets with, like, the banker guys,
right?
But also she can't be seen as, like, being friendly with Terrence Howard because then they would know that he's, like, backdoor betting on his boxers.
Yeah, it just feels, like, weirdly, not lazy, but just like, oh, we need to, like, manufacture conflict here at the end.
It would have been better if they were a couple,
right?
To be honest. I would have really liked it better if he would have been like, oh, yeah, like, I'm that baby's father.
Because it feels like, oh, that would have been good. Because it feels like Channing is like, you guys have a relationship? Like, what's going on here? And she's like, no, I make his bets. And he's just like, oh, cool, like, let's go fight. Like, that's like the whole, like, why even have that?
Because you needed her to be able to place the bets so that she could place the bet on Channing.
Yeah, okay. So maybe
that's
my problem is that, like, that should that should have come about in a different way, maybe. You know what I mean? Like, I know that they need to have $1 million at the end of the movie so they can run away. Also, the end of the movie, again, I'm being very critical of the movie that I enjoyed mostly. It's just like these little things that like kept it from being like a great movie.
I think that if we could have just like filed down some of the edges on this, we would have liked it as much, if not better, than A Guide to Recognizing Your Saints.
I think there was definitely the potential here to be as good as that movie. It just wasn't. At the end of the movie, the whole thing is that Channing's going to throw the fight. Terrence Howard is going to... He's got all his backers. He's got Luis Guzman. He's got all these different people. They're getting money from all these different, you know, whales. And they're going to bet on Channing to lose. So Channing's job in this final fight is to make it seem like he's trying but doesn't want to lose.
Get his ass beat, yeah. He needs to get his face beat in, but, like, give it an honest shot, yeah.
There's a point in the fight where Channing is almost about to tap out. Like, he locks eyes with Terrence Howard, and then Terrence Howard basically gives him the nod, like, this is where you go down. And, you know, just like in Pulp Fiction, like, your ass goes down in the fifth. Channing counters out of the chokehold or whatever.
Yeah.
And then knocks the guy the fuck out and wins. And so then Luis Guzman says to Terrence Howard, you're dead, whatever.
Yeah, because he owes, like, all this money now.
Right. Probably, like, $250,000 or $500,000 or whatever. And then they go to the apartment, Terrence Howard's apartment, and Channing's like, no, we bet on us to win. And he's like, oh, all right. And then their plan is just to leave town?
That's what I would have done. I would have fucking ran.
But it feels like, so in this world, right, like, they have $1 million now, they wouldn't have had $1 million before. Either way, whether they made the wrong bet and lost, or made the right bet and won and ran, they're both wanted by, like, dudes with lots of money who, like, are very angry. You know what I mean? Like, it feels like...
No, they're not, like, wanted if they won.
I guess the question is, so Zulai made the bet, right? And she put down all the money that Terrence Howard had collected from all the different people, right?
Yeah, on Channing.
Channing's got the bag with $1 million at the end. Is that just their money, or is that... I got the sense that was all of the money. That the people that were, like, rightfully owed, but they were just going to take that and get out of town. Like, I don't think that the backers got their money. I think that they're still owed, but the money exists. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that they just skim over that. I didn't think that they were running away with all of the winnings. It's not like they're going to be, like, punished for this. I think it's a common... It's, like, their cut of the money. And if it's not, they didn't plan on keeping the other people's cut of the... It's not like they were, like, you know, robbing a bank at this point or something. It's like... They were keeping the money that was rightfully theirs.
Okay, because that's the impression I got, that they were stealing all of the money. That they were like, well, fuck it, we're wanted anyway. Or people think that we're wanted anyway. Like, we might as well have $1 million.
No.
And go open an IHOP somewhere. Like, I feel like that just wasn't clear enough for me at the end.
Yeah, it's not, like, but okay. They didn't make it feel like that they were, like, stealing this money.
Because I guess realistically, he had won 3 fights, right? And so he had, like, 5 grand and 10 grand and 30 grand. So that's 45. Say Terrence Howard takes 20%, so Channing still has 35 grand. That I guess he could have doubled that and gotten to 70 on that fight, but, like,
I think his odds would have been really, really bad. So
maybe,
I think you're not factoring in that he could have, like, 4-1 odds or something.
Okay. Yeah. So he's so maybe he has, like, you know, 120 grand.
Yeah.
I guess that's enough to start a new life.
Or imagine that, like, we don't know how much money Terrence Howard had $250,000.
That's true.
Okay.
Yeah.
So between him and what Channing had, and then you say you give them 3-1 odds, you're at $1 million, right?
Yep.
So that's what I was... That's more of the calculation that I was doing.
That makes me feel better, but I also wish that the movie said that. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it could be like,
I get
we
it.
Paid off... Like, even Channing... All he has to say is, like, you know, we paid off the guys.
This is our
cut,
share.
It's 900 grand or whatever. We're out of town.
This is our share.
Yeah,
this is
exactly.
Our cut. So I thought two things. In the final fighting scene, I was really convinced that someone was going off the edge of the building.
Oh, yeah, but instead of going off the edge of the building, they go the other way. They go into the building. Like, they're on, like, this rooftop patio, and they, like, tumble through, like, plastic sheeting as it's being constructed. So it's, like, it's weird. Yeah, I agree.
I really thought that at one point we were going to get, like, our first Channing death.
Ooh, yeah.
And I thought that he was going to go off the building. And I was like, oh, man, I hope he doesn't go off the building.
I wonder, does Channing die in movies?
We haven't seen one yet, I don't think, right?
I mean, I'm taking a look at a thing. I wonder if he's going to die in Public Enemies next week, or next month, or in a couple months, or whatever, in the next episode. No, I don't have any, because, you know, we've been tracking, as we do the awards, we've been tracking for Charlize and everything, and, you know, for other things like Best Death, like, I don't have anything written down, so I don't think he's died.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I do wonder if he's gonna die. I mean, I feel like he probably would or should, but, you know, who knows? We'll see.
So that was my first thing. I thought that they were gonna go off the roof. And second thing I thought was that at the end. So, like, yeah. when we see them lock eyes, right, we see that there's something going on between them. There's some kind of chemistry.
You're talking who?
Terrence Howard and Channing when he's getting chokeholded.
Okay.
And they're in that final fight, and he, like, locks eyes with them. I thought what was going to happen is that it's going to be, like, a combination of, like, what you were saying and something else, is that Terrence Howard took the money, told everybody he bet on Brad Bramish, but he secretly bet on Channing, knowing that him telling Channing to throw it would be the best motivation for Channing to win. So I thought when Channing was going to show up at the end and, like, I told you I was going to win, Terrence Howard would have been like, yeah, I know, that's why I bet all of the money on you.
So you got the twist right, but it was sort of the how they got to the twist that you didn't get right.
Yes. So cool. That's what I thought was going to happen.
Okay. That makes sense.
So I thought that he was going to be like, oh, yeah. But instead, it was like, Channing was like, no, I bet on us. And I was like, oh, well, fuck. Okay, wrong guy. Same guy, different actor kind of thing. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Is Terrence Howard a good actor?
And then this?
Specifically, is he good in this?
I think it's pretty bad. I think it's bad. It's endearing. I liked it. But I don't think it's good.
It feels like he's sort of, like, half asleep in all these scenes.
He's kind of bumbly. He has a weird accent.
It feels like it sounds like, maybe this is true, I don't know. It sounds like his character is English as a second language.
Yes.
That he's very carefully choosing the words he's saying, and he's speaking softly so as to not misspeak, and it feels like he's just not comfortable speaking English.
But is he trying to do Midwest? Because he said he was from Chicago.
I'm from a city with culture. I'm from Chicago. Okay, you're in New York. I mean, there's...
You know what? I was leaving Manhattan yesterday.
Did you get in a fight?
No, I didn't street fight anyone.
Okay.
But I was thinking of this movie. I was, like, heading back to Grand Central, and I was thinking about, like, culturally, like, about Manhattan. I was trying to put my finger on, like, is there a lot of culture in New York?
I think there's a lot of culture that has been brought there. I don't know if there's necessarily original culture.
Now, I think that there is original culture, but not by the definition of culture that people try to say. Like, you know, you have things like underground dance scenes or underground fighting rings. Mm-hmm. And that is culture in a different sense of the word culture. In the same sense...
I mean, there's identity.
There's identity, yes. In the same sense, I think that there's culture in the art, right? Because it's just, like, such a large place, and, like, you know, you go to the MoMA or the Met, you go there, and there's tons of just, like, art and culture there. Is there a natural culture that you could compare to a city like Paris or Rome or any of these, like, cultural cities?
I think what's different about New York and what makes it great, and I think it's the same thing in a way with, like, Austin or LA, really, is that they're places that people move to. That people are native there, obviously. I mean, more so New York and kind of LA. Like, Austin, like, it's rare to find someone, you know, our age in Austin who was born there. Like, 'cause there's just so many people who move there that it's just, that's what the city's identity is. But I feel like when you have, like, a cultural hub that people want to move to, I think it's hard to define the native culture, because the culture is, in a sense, all cultures.
Yes, exactly. Okay.
It's the literal melting pot, right? So, like, there is culture. It's just, it's hard to say, like, oh, this is a New York thing, because, like, everything's kind of a New York thing.
Because if you, like, ask somebody, like, somebody, and you're like, what's the culture of New York? And they're like, slices of pizza.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, yeah, but no. And then you're like, well, what is the culture of New York? And you'll see, like, New York memes, and they'll be like, people wearing Timberland boots. And you're like, yeah, but that's not culture. You know what I mean? Like, that's a thing that happens there. And it is its own culture in a way, but it's not, like, big C culture. You know what I mean? Like, capital culture. Nobody's like, I want to go to New York and see Timberlands and, you know what
right.
I mean? Like,
yeah.
Stroking their beard type thing.
The only thing I can keep thinking of is that on Foodie Films, another podcast here on the network with Kyle Reinfried, hosts, talks about movies, talks about food, talks about everything. He's got the segment at the end where he asks his guests, like, he's got a gut instinct. So it's basically a bunch of questions, you know, whatever your first instinct is, like, let's just go through. It's all about food.
Okay.
One of the questions he asks is favorite food city. And I don't know if he exempts or excludes New York or people just don't say it, but I feel like it's the same kind of thing as the culture. Like, you can get any food you want in New York, and probably,
yes,
for the most part, it's going to be better than, you know, anywhere but maybe the original place. Like,
agreed,
they might not have...
A great representation of anything you can imagine can be found there.
Yes, and I think that's the same thing with the culture. Like, you know, it might not be the Deep South, like the Birmingham that Channing is from in this movie, or like the, you know, the style of New Orleans, or, you know, French food like in Paris, or Italian,
yeah,
food like in Rome, or whatever. But, like, outside of that original place, it's kind of like the next best thing, and
yeah,
I feel like that's why it's hard to define culture or choose it as like a favorite food city, because it kind of feels like a cop-out, sort of, because it's like it's everything, you know what I mean? Like,
this is like what's your favorite music, anything but country,
yeah,
kind of thing, like, you know what I mean? Like, you're like,
mm-hmm,
oh yeah, like, what's your favorite food city? Like, New York.
Well,
and you're like, well, what kind? You're like, well, everything
but country food.
Exactly, yeah.
But yeah, so because the reason I asked about Terrence Howard, which is how we sort of got here, is that, like, one of the people on Letterboxd with the most recent review was like, I've never seen Terrence Howard better than this. I was like, really?
Better?
Yeah, like, they were like, he's great. And I was like, huh.
He plays kind of, but it's the character, too. Like, he plays kind of like humdrum, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't see anything great about that.
No.
What are some of the other Terrence Howard movies? What can I...
He's on Empire, right? Yeah, that's, like, I think probably
he's on
what
Empire
he's most
now.
Known for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I need to see, like, some of the other ones and see if I can think of one that's better.
Terrence Howard. So he says he's from Chicago. He's actually from Chicago, which is cool. Channing in this movie says he's from Alabama. He's actually from Alabama, so that's kind of cool. He's in Hustle and Flow. He's in Crash. He's
Crash,
in Four
Iron
Brothers.
Man.
He's in the first Iron Man, yeah.
I have to imagine that he's better in some of the other stuff than...
Like, I've seen a lot of his movies, but I don't remember him in them. But I'm like, he's gotta be, because he's a big actor.
Well, that's a good sign. You don't remember him. If you remembered him, you'd be like, I remember he's a shitty actor.
Right.
Or I remember he's a great actor.
So maybe
you just
he's
kind
just
of
good.
Have these... Yeah, he's normally just like... Up to par, you know?
Just, you know, not in this.
Yeah, I definitely watched this one, and I was like, man, I usually don't mind... Like, I usually like Terrence Howard. Not that I think that he's great or anything, but then in this one, I was watching it, and I was like, I don't know.
Oh, one thing that I made note of is that when he has that first official fight in the church, I was like, I wonder if this is Boy in Church or whatever that he was credited as in War of the Worlds.
What if he was fighting in the church and then, like, the alien just came by and opened a portal to another dimension and they all got sucked into the other dimension? They never even saw it happen.
I love it.
That's a good way to do it.
All Terrence Howard wants to do is open an IHOP with an office and his name on the door. I'm like, that seems like a simple goal, but, you know, I guess you could probably do that with the seed money from the end of the movie.
Do you know this thing about Gary Vaynerchuk? Do you know who this guy is, right?
I know the name.
He's like the social media, like, guru guy, and he makes like,
okay,
all of these like inspirational videos on YouTube or on Facebook all the time.
Okay.
But what he does is he, like, you know, teaches companies how to, like, promote or use social media, and he's like, he's probably running a pyramid scheme or something, who the fuck knows, but he's like trying to, like, teach, like, kids. They're like, they come to him with, like, a business idea, like, I want to, you know, make this app, and he's like,
yep,
okay, you got to believe in yourself and you're the product and, like, these kind of things. But his, when you were saying this, his ultimate goal is always by the Jets, the New York Jets football team.
Oh, okay.
He says that, like, his goal was always buy the Jets. And, like, at the end of the day, he's like, dude, I'm going to buy the Jets one day. I'm going to buy the Jets one day. But he knows that buying the Jets is a pipe dream. But he set a goal that's so high for himself, he always has to try to achieve it. Like,
mm-hmm,
if he would have set the goal as, like, buy an IHOP with a desk.
Yeah.
Then when he got there, he'd be like, okay, cool, I have my IHOP.
I was like, where is this story going? But now I get it. Okay.
Yeah. And this is just, like, a really... It's an interesting thing to think about. You set a goal for yourself, and I don't think that... But maybe in New York City, his goal is unachievable. You know what I mean? Like, all these, like, hustler kind of guys have this, like, dream that they're like, yeah, one day, once I get that Lambo, I'm done. But
yeah,
you're never going to get the Lambo, so you're always working, you know?
Right. Speaking of Lambos, excellent segment transition. Channing's name in this movie, character name, is Sean. Do you think, if he ever comes into the Fast and Furious universe, he plays other Sean's Bama brother?
I want him to go back in time and play Tokyo Drift Sean.
Ooh, yeah. So 2003, that was a couple years before he started. He would have been real baby. Or no, 2006 was Tokyo Drift. That would have been right in his wheelhouse.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying.
Damn.
And he would have looked a little bit younger than real Sean. He would have had the same goofy accent. And he would have done really good.
You know, we were talking about, when you came to visit for Camp Cage Club, we were talking about how would Emma Stone fit into the Fast and Furious universe. Not that she really ties into this podcast. This conversation, of the three podcasts we're doing, this has the least, you know, relationship to these. But
yeah,
you and I are now playing a game every once in a while. Like, how could we fit this person in the Fast and Furious? I do think that Channing gotta be related to Sean somehow, or just be Sean, or whatever. Like, it's just, we already have a tie to Alabama.
Maybe he's just Sean's brother, Sean, and they had two Seans in the family. That would be so perfect, right?
And they sent one to Tokyo and one to New York, because neither of them were, they were both bad boys.
Exactly. Like, the mom was, like, the same, is it illegal to smoke in here?
I wrote down that, of course, in this movie, they play Every Day I'm Hustling, because that's, like, that basically could be the name of this movie. Like, when we play,
yes.
When we play Fire Ass Titles later, like, hustling has got to be, you know, it's just, like...
You've seen this Cat Williams, right?
Yes.
He's so right. Like, when you hear that song, you could be doing the most meaningless job in the world, and you hear, like, Every Day I'm Hustling, and then you would just be like, yeah, I'm gonna fucking kill this day.
Like, you know, fighting is obviously first and foremost in this movie, but, like, right behind it is hustling. Like, everybody's hustling to get everything. Like, whether you have nothing or have everything, people are hustling in this movie.
Yeah.
I was like, the song choice is a little on the nose, but also feels like without that,
this,
you know,
had a really great soundtrack
exist?
In general. I wrote down that I really liked the soundtrack of all of the hip-hop that was in this.
Yeah.
It was one of my favorite of the soundtracks, but, you know, I like the hip-hops, so...
And I think... That goes into Dito Montiel's just ability to capture, like, a mood. You know what I mean? Like, this sort of... It's the little... I mean, not that the soundtrack is little, but it's the little things that contribute or add together to make this overall feeling of New York about 10 years ago, this underground, you know, the sort of, like...
The hustling, too,
hustle.
Dude.
Yeah.
The street hustle. Like, I think that he captures the, like, I scalp tickets and I also do this and, like, you can sleep on the couch because, like, my apartment, I'm going to get a bigger one and, you know, like, the struggle of this thing, and I think that he does a great job of showing that, too.
Yeah. I don't remember who said this. It might have been... I don't think it was Terrence Howard. It might have been Luis Guzman. It might have been somebody else, but right before that final fight, I just wrote down a quote in the words of the great American poet Marvin Gaye, "Let's get it on." And I was like,
all
right.
Oh, it's the guy who took all the bets for the money.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, when she, like, delivers the money, she delivers it to that guy.
Yep.
And I was like, that was probably the worst line in this movie.
I think I wrote down for just, like, almost every fight he's in, I'm like, did he kill him? Did Channing Tatum kill that man? Like, it feels like almost all the fights could end with Channing, like, you know, going to jail for murder. Like, you know, or manslaughter, at least. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I'm really curious. I want to see, like, fighting behind the scenes. Like, how do they clean up these bodies? I guess you're in New York, like, there's a bunch of bodies, so you could just, like, dump them anywhere. No, I'm not even kidding.
No, but I know what you mean, yeah.
But, like, you know, like, you just, like, oh, like, wrap some clothes on him and, like, set him next to, like, a stoop, and you're like, he fell down the steps, okay, yep. Wrap it up.
I don't have any other notes. I have a little bit of trivia about this, but you have any other notes? What else you got?
Did you notice, this is, like, my favorite past that, we talk about this in a lot of other movies when we, like, talk about them. When she went to look up Channing, she asked Jeeves about him.
Oh, I didn't notice it, but I should have looked, but I remember her Googling or whatever, searching for it, but yeah.
Well, she was asking Jeeves, she wasn't Googling.
Wonderful.
So I was like, very, very, like, that times this movie very well. Ask Jeeves versus Google. When he was doing his training montage, why was he training in the subway car?
I don't know. I don't, like, I feel like this movie is just like, hey, it's New York. Like, what's the most New York thing you could do? Just be on the subway.
But if it was in New York and you were on the subway, there'd be other people there.
Yeah.
You'd never be riding a subway train that was completely empty. I mean, unless you're just a lunatic that was working out on a subway car by yourself and everybody else is like, well, fuck that car.
Right.
Like, I'm out.
Which might have been, you know, who knows?
But, like, this was after he won a bunch of fights, so, like, you have, like, 20 grand, you couldn't get a fucking gym membership for a week and a half? Or they don't have, like, some kind of, like, gym that they, like, the bros, the fucking investment banker bros couldn't have been like, yeah, just come to my building, like, I'll let you into the gym, whatever you want, bro, like...
Well, I mean, this is also a movie in which Channing Tatum sleeps on a park bench. Like, he's got money, he's just dumb. He's just a dumb kid.
I guess. No, but this was, like, at the beginning. Those were my last, like, qualms that I had about the movie. I do like that he played, this is, like, the second time, and possibly third if you include War of the Worlds, that he played a New York ruffian that was somewhere.
He, being such a ruffian, he broke his nose in real life during one of the fight scenes in this movie, so...
Really?
Yeah, that was the top little bit of trivia on IMDb, so that's something worth noting. The other thing...
I want to kind of fight Channing Tatum.
You want to fight him?
Yeah, I do.
I think he would fuck you up.
Oh, I think he would, too, but I think it would be a fun thing. I wonder how tall he is. Do you know how tall he is?
Ooh, I'm going to guess...
6'1".
I'm going to say 5'11".
Okay.
Channing Tatum height, Google, 6'1".
I was right?
How tall do you think Jetta Dewan is?
5'9".
5'3".
Whoa!
Yep. Here's a fun little thing. Who else... So when people, you know, Google's like, who else do people search for? It's Channing Tatum height, Jenna Dewan is number 2. Who's number one and number three? Number three, I don't think you're going to get. It's Joe Manganiello from the Magic Mike movies, the guy who's dating or married to Sofia Vergara.
Who is, I know exactly who that is because he's a huge
Pittsburgh sports fan.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And he was at the Penguins game the other night.
We fawn over Channing's form a lot in this podcast, but like Joe Manganiello is like literally carved out of marble. Like he is
a specimen. Love Sofia Vergara too.
Yeah.
Like, huge crush.
But who do you think is the fourth person? The number one person when they search for Channing Tatum, they also search for who?
I have no idea. Who is it?
It's a man who's 5'7". We've not gotten to their team
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
No, we've not. Close, sort of. It's somebody he's in a bunch of movies with, or a handful of movies with.
I don't know. Who is it?
Jonah Hill.
Oh.
People want to know what that wacky duo, their height difference is.
That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. Okay.
I don't know if this is really doable, but how much do you think this movie cost to make? Do you think it was expensive, cheap, or somewhere in between?
$12 million.
$25 million, which was more than I thought.
I was going to go, to me, 25 is about mid-range. You know, we have the movies that are like 5, and then we have the movie that are like 100.
Yep.
So I was going somewhere like, but the scale goes exponential. It's like 5, 25, 100.
And then like 250.
Exactly, yeah. So yep. I was thinking, that's why I guessed like 15, 12, 15.
So it made $11 million in its opening weekend. It made a total of 32 and a half. So
it took a loss.
Depending on how much it marketed, you know, if they paid a lot for marketing, it might have lost money. But it cost more to make and made more money than I would have thought, but, you know, not too bad.
Yeah.
All right. So we are going to now do, the first thing is the trailer game.
Oh,
so yeah. I have no idea how you would do this. So fighting movie trailer. Fighting official trailer number one from Movie Clips Classic Trailers. It is a classic.
Yeah.
I'm putting it in Discord for you. It has 3.5 million views. So that's a lot.
That's a ton, to be honest.
I wonder if there's a correlation between trailer views and Letterboxd logs. You know what I mean?
Don't get me. You're just trying to jinx me for the fucking...
I don't know anything about it. I'm just throwing some numbers out there trying to confuse you.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're doing a good job.
Let me know when you're ready to play. We can play it.
Yep.
3, 2, 1, play. So it's fighting official trailer number one, Channing Tatum, Terrence Howard movie. 2009.
Makes sense.
D.
Shot in New York.
New York City. Really, the fifth character. Oh, there's the girls that you don't want to hit on.
Yeah. Competition is
brutal. Trailer so far is a lot of people just looking angry, which I guess is most of this movie. Be the
best. When you want fighting to be the best. Everybody leaves you. Miss one step in this game, everybody leaves you. For
Sean MacArthur. Oh, Channing waking up shirtless. Well, we'll get to that in a little bit, reviewing our, you know, what he was doing. But I got excited when that
happened.
There
we go, first fight. They're showing you all the fights that he has. Wow.
Channing selling umbrellas, ironically, in a downpour.
Well, I have a fun story about
maybe perfect
that.
Timing. If I have to, I can make
you $5,000. $5,000 if he fights right here. So
what they got rules? Terrence Howard, at least that line sort of sounds like Ryan Gosling in a way. He's sort of got that, like.
He does, you're right.
How come I never heard of you? This movie also reminded me a little bit of Only God Forgives.
Only Goss Forgives?
Only Goss Forgives, but it was in a way that, like, that movie explained somehow less and more at the same time. Like, it said less words, but you knew exactly what was going on.
Yeah. I agree.
Here, they said a lot of things, and you're just like, I don't know why these are happening. Like, I can follow it, but, like, I don't know why any of this is happening.
Yeah.
Chang does spend most of this movie getting his ass kicked, though. Like, he gets beat to shit.
Yeah, he does. He does get... And he, like, bounces back. Like, an hour later, he's like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Like, there's definitely a shot that he took that broke a rib, and he was like, okay, let's go to the club.
How old do you think his character is in this movie? Because they talk about, like, when Terrence Howard sells him to the guy, to the first promoter, he's like, he's a boy who went to college, you know what I mean? So he's probably saying he's like 22, 23, 24, maybe.
I was going to say 24.
Okay. Shirtless
fight. What's going on? I'm surprised there wasn't more drugs in this movie.
Yeah, almost like the end of literally the first 5 Channing Tatum movies. Like, remember, like, you know, Coach Carter and Havoc and everything, where they all ended up like drugs and drug busts and stuff like that?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But I feel like there should have been like a huge drug thing at the end of this.
You know what I do want to say? This is not the first time it's happened. We are firmly now in the point of his career where he can be sold as a leading man and, like, sell movie tickets. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, he can.
Now, I think post-Step Up, this is the kind of movie, I think, to sort of generalize, girls might want to go see because Channing is shirtless and fighting and, like, acting like a real man, and guys want to see because it's, like, a fighting movie. You know what I mean? Like, it's the kind of movie that you, if you're alternating dates, you know, high schoolers or whatever. It kind of feels like sort of a compromise, like more of a dude's movie, but it feels like also at the same time, oh, he's the guy from Step Up now. He's kind of crossing over that type of audience or fan base.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. Rachel and I were watching the beginning of the movie, and they got to a point, and I'm like, oh, Rachel, do you know where they are? And she's like, where? And I was like, they're like a street across from Carnegie Deli. And then like the camera pans to show the other side of Channing's face and Carnegie Deli's in the background. And she was like, what? I was like, I just know way too much of like that block.
That
like,
one street in New York.
Because I was like, the burger joint's right there, like around the corner. And you know, like I just like saw him walking carrying the boxes. And even with all the scaffolding, I was still like, I know right where this is. Just based on food places. That was strictly based on like the food destinations around that area is how I knew where it was.
I was driving around Upper Manhattan this weekend because I recorded a podcast with Brian Rodriguez, who was on our Too Fast, Too Forever episode. He'll be on this show for something at some point. I don't remember what he signed up for. Maybe Dear John? Some, like, romance movie, I think. Okay. Anyway, I was there, and I was driving around looking for parking, and I was like, oh, shit, I've been here before, but I was there in Grand Theft Auto 4. You know what I mean? Like, I know the city, but, like, it's where, like, it's the elevated subway, and you're driving around. I'm like, oh, I've been here, just not, you know...
I told you this story too, right? Like every time we go to South Beach, Rachel like lived there and she went to school, like, so she went to school down in Miami. So
oh,
she,
but
like,
you played Vice City.
But I played Vice City, so like, like I swear to God, like we looked one time and I was like, no, I think it's like a two streets over and like that way. And she's like, well, which way is the beach? I'm like, behind us, duh. And she's like, how do you know everything about South Beach? I was like, Vice City. And she's like,
yeah.
No, are you serious? And I'm like, it's literally Vice City, like, down to, like, the decor of the buildings.
Yeah, like everything is, like, nothing is 100%, but everything is 90%, and, like, intentionally 90%. Like, there's not, like, the right names, but it's the geography, it's the
architecture, styling of the,
it's everything, yeah.
Everything is dead on. So, like, so every time I'm in South Beach, like, even, like, driving, I'm like, oh, yeah, like, there's that one hotel, and, like, there's this, like, I just know where, like, the safe house is and, like, all the other stuff.
Love it.
Yeah, so my north, south, east, and west in South Beach is really good.
Have you taken your talent? I guess you have taken your talents to South Beach of, you know, geography and such. Okay, Google Games. We're going to search Fighting Channing Tatum.
Okay.
Oh, boy. There's a bunch of things. So there's cast, review, soundtrack, IMDb, Netflix, full movie online, trailer online, and actors. There's only one thing, even though it's kind of generic. You might be disappointed in it, but there's one thing that's kind of guessable. It has nothing to do with his appearance or...
Tumblr.
You know, no.
Not shirtless.
Mm-mm.
City?
No. Okay, I did Channing Tatum Fighting. I reversed it, and I have one other one. So there's two that you can try to guess. One is about the movie as a whole, and then
director?
One is about Channing in regards to the movie. No, not director.
Year?
No. And again, these are they're super vague. And like I try, like they're the best of the bad ones.
What are they?
Ending.
Okay.
And Workout.
Oh, it's always Workout. And I keep forgetting this. It's always Workout. God damn it.
How do I look like Channing Tatum, basically?
Exactly. How does my boyfriend look like Channing Tatum?
No girl is gonna be searching for which wife beater did he wear. You know what I mean? Like it's just put on a wife beater and like if you look like or your guy looks like Channing Tatum, then cool, you're done. Otherwise, you know, he's always just like in like ratty hoodies and wife beaters in this movie. Okay.
He's had this same costume for like the past 20, like everything that we see him in is wife beaters and hoodies. Like
what I love about, you know, you hear people who act on movies say about how they sometimes like steal wardrobes from the set, like if they're able to, like they just take stuff, but like he can't walk, like I mean sure he can walk away with this stuff, like it's not like cool, like it's like just go to like Target and spend $40 and you could have the outfit, you know what I mean? Like
yeah.
All right, Letterboxd game, Fighting, 2009, directed by Dito Montiel. For comparison's sake, Mad Max Fury Road, the most popular film on Letterboxd, has been seen by 273,000 people. Okay? 273. Okay. How many people have seen Fighting, starring Channing Tatum?
I'm going to say 11,732.
Lower.
7,845.
Lower.
Really?
Yeah.
5,673.
3177. Relatively, almost nobody. I mean, it's not like Derby Stallion numbers, but it's pretty low.
That's low. I expected at least, like, the cast is pretty good. You know what I mean?
Terrence Howard, yeah. Out of those 3177, average rating of 2.5, I gave it 2.5. How many have it in their top four?
One.
Zero. Nobody has this movie in the top four. However, 12 people gave it a 5-star rating.
Okay.
So I'm going to go to two dudes with pictures, see if any of their top four. Oh, perfect. Here okay. we go. Steve Williams, at Steve Williams on Letterboxd, StephenWilliams92, or SteveWilliams92 on Twitter.
Okay.
Has two followers, or five followers, he's following two people. Doesn't seem to be using this site anymore. Does have a top four.
This could go two different ways.
Okay, there's three gigantic movies from the 90s, and then a movie that we've talked about in this episode a lot.
It's gonna be Fight Club.
Number one. You're not gonna sweep, because that would be ridiculous, but like if you've ever been able to sweep Letterboxd, you're never gonna have a better shot than this. I can just tell you that right now.
Okay.
No pressure, because like this is the most difficult game in the world.
Yeah.
But if there was ever a time where you could get all four or get four without getting one wrong, it would be this guy.
Okay. So wait, it's a top five, right? So I think
top four. Top four. You have three more. Fight Club is number one. Two other massive movies from the 90s, and one that we've talked about on this episode a lot.
One that we talked about on this episode a lot.
Yeah.
Game of Death.
No.
What else? A Guide to Recognizing Your Saints is an entertaining movie?
Yep, mm-hmm. Okay. Number two. His number four is a movie that I referenced once that you and I both love. I mentioned very briefly on this episode that has a thematic element that ties into this movie. And then number three is a massive movie that beat that movie. Okay, here's a hint. His last two movies came out in the same year.
Okay.
One Best Picture and beat this other movie that a lot of people were just like, I can't believe this one movie won over this other one. Not Crash, but like in that same sort of way, you know what I mean? Both came out the same year. The second one I referenced, the one that lost, I referenced in this episode. Both came out the same year, both in the 90s, both two of the biggest movies in the 90s.
Independence Day.
No.
I have Shape of Water on the brain, because I was thinking about... One of them won Best Picture.
I believe so. One won Best Picture, and it came out in a year where it was stacked at the Oscars that year, and...
Forrest Gump?
Mm-hmm. Number three.
Okay.
And what movie did it beat that a lot of people say it shouldn't have beaten? A movie that I referenced very briefly earlier in the episode.
Oh, I don't remember.
It has something... Like, I mentioned it because it has something to do thematically... With a key plot point in this movie.
With a Fight Club?
Sort of, but it's not a Fight Club, but a fight.
I don't...
94.
1994.
It's a movie you guess a lot. It's one. I think one of your favorite movies probably from the 90s. It's a really
Pulp
big
Fiction?
Movie. Yeah, Pulp Fiction.
Oh, I would have guessed Pulp Fiction so much earlier. Okay, cool.
Fight
wow,
Club, A Guide to Recognizing
Your Saints,
Forrest
Holy
Gump,
shit.
And Pulp Fiction. Like, that is, like, not like an easy top four to guess, but like the easiest by far that we've ever had.
Yeah, it took a while to get there, but, like, I don't think that those clues were too heavy-handed, so...
No.
You kept it as vague as possible with leading me on the right direction.
So there we go. So that was the most successful this game will ever be. We might as well retire that game now, because
yeah.
we're never going to get all four again. Okay.
Because we don't have Mike Manzi with us to just crush it. He'll be like, oh, yeah, just, like, brrr, and just crush it.
Yeah, I can give both of you clues to guide you there, but they are, like, the opposite clues.
Exactly.
Like, Joe, it's... It's that guy from that one episode of... I think you might have said he was on King of the Road. I don't know, but, like, it might have been a commercial for another Vice show. You're like, oh,
yeah, like,
oh,
course. Yeah,
like,
yeah, whatever. I know exactly who you're talking about. Yeah.
Oh, boy. Okay, fire-ass titles. So we made this game up on Zack Attack. How would you rename this movie to be as High School Musical as possible? I'm going to start off with Hustling, or Hustlin', apostrophe.
Back in the New York Groove.
From Ragazzi.
Exactly.
Hustle Hard.
Ragazzi.
The Streets.
The Dog Pound.
Ooh.
Yeah,
I do like the idea.
Fighting.
I love the idea of this movie as a dog fighting movie. The Channing's just a puppy.
Exactly. That's what I keep thinking about. I'm just like, you could instantly take him and any of the other characters out and just make this a dog fighting movie without them. I mean, like, without the, like, you know, Channing, the Russian, the Asian,
yeah.
the,
mm-hmm.
yeah, Brad Bramish. You could just take them all out and just...
Yeah. Oh, so if he's not a dog, if he's actually a person, one way he's described early in the movie is just... A white boy who went to college, which is kind of a real Ooh. Weird movie. I feel like it'd be like more of an indie movie, but, you know, a white boy
Ooh.
Who went to college.
I got a really good one. The Club.
Ooh. As it could mean, like, club mean as, like, a fist, like a punch, or where they fight.
Or the nightclub.
Ooh, yeah. Ooh, yeah. I'll just do IHOP. Just, like, this movie brought to you by IHOP.
How about a little Zefnection, and we just call it Bet On It, Bet On It, Bet On It, Bet On It.
Ooh, I love it. Oh, there's one thing. I'm looking through my notes again for inspiration. There's one thing that I wrote down that every time they go somewhere that isn't where they're from, they always just shit talk the place. So I wrote down, I can't stand Brooklyn. Or, like, or, you know, this is why I never come to the Bronx. So just, you know.
Yeah, everybody's very, very borough-centric in New York. I love it. How about ruffians?
Mm-hmm.
Knockout.
Ooh, Knockout's really good. Knockout is really good. Do you think Channing ate that calamari that Zulai ordered?
Yeah.
Okay.
Alabama, I was just thinking Alabama probably had some gator at some point, squirrel at some point. Calamari's not too scary.
This is similar to what you said before, but place your bets.
Bricks.
All right, I think that's good, because that references a lot of different things, so I like that, I like that, I like that. Okay.
Good.
Dancing, shirtless, fight, and stripping. So let's review this movie. I don't think he dances, although, Aisla in the last episode, we review her guesses, she said the dance is essentially his fights. Like, his fights are the choreography.
They're scored, like, as if they're dance battles, so.
I wasn't sure if I was really into or not into at all the fighting in this movie. That, like, it felt like some of it felt like really cool to watch. I felt like gritty and real. And then some of the camera was just like kind of muddy, and I wish that like we just had like a more of like a zoomed out shot that just didn't cut as quickly. You know what I mean? That we could actually see. Because I feel like Channing fights a bunch in movies that he can probably hold his own. I kind of want to see that.
The thing with me is that whenever I see fighting in a movie, I always compare it to Fight Club, and you can't do much better than that. So that's like my bar. Then anything else kind of shoots lower than it.
So he does not dance. He fights, obviously, the entire movie. He's shirtless twice when he wakes up, when he gets a text from Terrence Howard, and also the last fight he gets shirtless. And then in terms of stripping, he strips down to his wife beater for every fight, and he also strips down to his bare chest for the final fight. So, you know, 3 out of 4, not too bad for a movie.
Yeah.
We recorded this, I feel, like so long ago. I don't remember mine. Okay, so here we go.
Good.
Here's my guess. It's a movie about growing up, coming of age. Channing's not in high school, but he's close. Okay, half a point.
Okay.
He's fighting with his dad verbally about becoming his own man. Channing's parents not even in this movie.
But I think you should get a full point for that because the dad fight was like pivotal to the movie.
Oh, that's
like
true. All right, so 1.5. His dad owns an Italian deli. Nope. And wants Channing Tatum to inherit it. He wants to retire. Channing wants to blaze his own path. There's verbal fighting. They don't see eye to eye. There's also street fighting. This is a spiritual sequel to Ragazzi. Full point.
Which, yeah, because it literally is. It's exactly what
this
is.
But then I said, back in time, Italians. He's fighting kids on the street, which I already gave myself a point for that. He's a boxer of sorts. He's a wrestler. If I said wrestler, I would have given my points.
Yeah.
It's like the Rocky Five. Aisland says that this is like, if this is movies Rocky 1 through 4 and 6 and 7, because he's a boxer, which we'll get to. So mine is Rocky Five, which kind of sort of is, like just like a street thing, so half a point, so I'll say 3 total so far. There's no fighting in the ring, just boxing the streets with Tommy the Machine Gun. So in one scene, he'll be in the streets and the shirt will get ripped, he tears it off. That doesn't happen, but it could. It might as well in that first fight. Next to Deli's a laundromat. In the laundromat, this is sort of like Shameless, where Emmy Rossum buys a laundromat and converts it to a cool nightclub. A place where young people do their laundry at night, drink and dance. That's kind of laundromat next door. Channing has a romance with the girl he meets there. He has a romance at a club, so half point? I mean, it's not a laundromat club, but
yeah,
they slow dance. Really, there's bubbles and disco lighting all around. No. It takes place in the 80s. He realizes what he wants is right next door to where his dad wants him to be. He found his own path. It just happens to be the same one his dad wanted him to take. So 3.5. That is by far my best one. I don't think it's as good as Mike's She's the Man one, where he got, like, so much right, but that's, you know, pretty solid, I think.
Yeah, no, you nailed a lot of stuff. You were really close.
On the other side of that coin, you said, this movie's called Fighting, but it's really about the International Beard Growing Championships.
Okay.
The fight is that whoever is going to win has the most epic mustache in the movie. Channing will be shirtless as he's trimming his beard in the mirror. He's going to fight, but no fisticuffs. It's him combing out his beard as it's very naughty.
That was it?
Well, that was your part of it.
Okay.
Part of the beard competition is a dance competition where you have to dance with your beard, and he'll do a striptease dance for the beard portion. So while I loved the subplot where he was grooming his beard for 45 minutes of this movie, unfortunately, no points can be awarded.
That's fine.
But it was a good guess.
Have we ever even seen him with facial hair? Where did I get that from?
I don't know.
I don't know either. Okay.
Aisland did our 4 guesses plus a couple other categories. I didn't remember this until I looked at this. So she says he's shirtless the entire film. So no, would have been better, but no. Every time he starts a fight, he says to the other person, "Do you want to dance? They're so similar. Come on, bro, you want to dance?" So
it's more of a Gosling line.
He doesn't feel like a little bit. Maybe he doesn't do it. Maybe the guys do it to him. But you know that like that Morpheus, like the come here, like when he's fighting Keanu in that like simulation. Like, fighting. She says it's called fighting. He's a boxer in it. So. Again, wrestler, not a boxer,
half a point.
But half point. She said tattoos. She said this isn't on the list, but he's going to have tattoos just like he has in Stop Loss. I don't think so.
I don't think he had any tattoos.
For such like a street kid, he's kind of, you know, clean cut for the most part.
Yeah.
Stripping. As a boxer, at the beginning of each fight, there's an element of stripping. When they take off their shiny little robe, he's going to take it off with a flourish, a little leg, bring up the anticipation, which doesn't have a shiny little robe, but he does always take off his equivalent of a robe. 3/4 of a point. Yeah. Point and a quarter. Crying, inevitable crying when he gets hit in the nose, which crying is not a category we do,
but Eisen pointed out the nose,
and he broke his nose on set, so yeah. Eisen gets another 3/4 of a point. We'll do 2 full points there. So, Eisen, if you're listening, she texted me out of nowhere about Too Fast, Too Forever, because she was listening to the episode. I know she listens to those. I don't know if she listens to this, but Eisen, if you're listening, excellent job.
Yeah, you did a much better job than I did.
That's not to say that your guess was bad. It just, you know, I would have loved to have seen that. Okay.
Yeah, same.
Our next movie, like I said before, is Public Enemies, which is, I think, a Johnny Depp movie about, like, gangsters in Chicago, maybe? I don't know. I think that I'm pretty sure this is a movie that I had been meaning to see for a while and never got around to seeing. I will finally cross that off my list. But, Joe, how will Channing Tatum in this movie called Public Enemies, will he strip, be shirtless, dance, and fight?
In Public Enemies, Channing Tatum is a news reporter.
Okay.
It's set in the 80s, but it's a dystopic universe where in the future, he's a public enemy because everybody's out to destroy the news.
Okay.
In the movie, he will have to cover a salsa dance competition.
Okay.
As one of his, like, beginning news stories. He doesn't want to do it, but that's what he's going to do. And it's going to be the international salsa competition sponsored by Tostitos.
Okay.
Or what is they called? Is that the Dorito ones?
Tostitos. Tostitos, yeah, the chips, yeah. Right?
Sponsored
yeah.
by them.
Mm-hmm.
Salsa competition.
Yep.
They still exist in the future. Somebody's partner breaks their ankle.
Oh, so this is like a real step-up situation.
And they call Channing in.
Okay.
Is there a doctor in the house? But it's like, does anybody dance salsa here? And Channing's like, I do. And then he wins, and they give him a lifetime supply of Totino's salsa.
Tostitos
salsa. He is going to be shirtless because he's going to be up late at night writing the news story about the salsa. And so he's just like at a typewriter, just shirtless, cranking this out. He's going to go and be like, I need to go get some coffee to like finish the story, right?
Yep.
So he like puts his robe on. He like walks out into the streets of New York. He's trying to find coffee and somebody tries to rob him and he just like beats the shit out of this guy in the street.
Okay, so it's like at the beginning of this movie. Okay.
Yeah. And then what else?
So you have dancing, you have shirtless, and you have fighting now, so you just need stripping.
Oh, so he beats the shit out of the guy so good that he takes his robe off and goes, night, night, and sets it on top of him.
Okay.
Like he swaddles him in his own robe.
Okay.
That's what happens. That's Public Enemies, the movie.
Wonderful. I love it.
And at some point, somebody says, you can't handle the truth, too, at the same time.
Okay.
Like, I think Channing delivers it. They're like, we want the salsa story. He's like, you can't handle the truth.
I love it. When Channing gives the salsa story, he shouts, you can't handle the truth.
Perfect.
Cool. So I'm going to pretend that I'm sort of right in that it's about Chicago in the 30s or something. I don't know, like Al Capone days. But I'm not going to say he's a gangster just because I feel like that's kind of lazy. I'm going to say he runs a speakeasy.
Okay.
His bar is, or his speakeasy is the place where all these, like, you know, criminal types like to hang out. And he's not a criminal, but, like, he kind of looks the other way, and they sort of take care of him. They give his shop a little bit of protection.
Okay.
And there's fighting because, you know, they're a bunch of ruffians, to use your word. They're a bunch of ruffians. And there's always fighting breaking out, and Channing has to, you know, keep order. So sometimes, like, if somebody's, like, you know, acting up at the bar, he'll just, like, punch a dude in the face, okay? Oh, that's here's an idea. Okay. Channing's, I don't know how this ties into the greater plot of Al Capone or whatever, if this is even the plot. Like, in my movie, it's a plot. That's about Al Capone and all that sort of stuff. But Channing's a bartender, and he sees, we'll just say Emma Stone, because in my mind, this is also Gangster Squad.
Okay.
And someone's hitting on Emma Stone at the bar, and he's getting real physical with her, and Channing punches her. Does not punch her. Punches the dude.
I would love to see Channing punch Emma Stone. That would be pretty good, too, though.
It would be pretty good. And so then Emma Stone's like, oh my god, thank you so much. You know, I don't think I need your help, but, like, you know, I appreciate it or whatever. He then takes her out on a date. And she's not, it's not like Gangster Squad in that she's affiliated with the Mickey Cohen type. She's independent of all that. She just likes, you know, her booze or whatever. They go out to dinner. You know, again, this is sort of, I feel like, the same kind of thing for all of my answers. Brings her home. He lives above the bar in, like, a little apartment. Dances, strips down the shirtless while they have sex or whatever. But while they, you know, after that all happens, you know, the bar is closed for the night or whatever. But someone angry at the Al Capone character or whoever throws Molotov cocktails into the bar, burns the building down. Channing and Emma Stone die.
Wow. Okay, Channing Death.
So, like, that's kind of, yeah, that's where it, you know, the movie sort of pivots. I'm like, how does this sort of tie in? It just sort of, like, it's like the end of Act One, like, you know, that's some weird way that, like, the gangsters are like, oh, no, like, we need to get vengeance. Like, it's a whole, like, sort of, like, turf war there. Okay. So it's, like, the side plot that you think, like, is this what the movie's about? And then they die. You're like, oh, no, I guess it's about Al Capone, so.
Yeah.
That feels.
That makes sense.
About right. Sure.
Okay.
So, the last thing we have to do here is talk about the awards for this movie. I'm not gonna say best film, not gonna say worst film. Do we want to nominate it for best of the worst? That the only movie that we have there so far is Supercross. Is this movie like Supercross in that it's not good, but it's fun?
Yes.
Okay.
I also think best fighting, like, all of it, essentially.
Sure. Absolutely. We'll get to there in just 1 second. Okay. Most disappointing movie, no. Best role or worst role? Not really. He's just kind of like a empty, like a blank slate in a way, right?
Yeah.
Do you want to nominate it for most fun film for now? Or no? I feel like it's...
I feel like
there's too much downtime between the fun parts that it's not... It's not. I don't think it's meant to be entertaining, really.
No.
Like, it is, but I don't think it's like... It's not meant to be like a, oh, like 90 minutes or an hour 45 or whatever of, like, just excitement. Like, there's... It's, you know...
Yeah.
Best song, we could do Every Day I'm Hustling, but I'd rather just nominate it for best soundtrack as a whole.
Same.
Best love story, eh. Best dancing scene, there is none. Best shirtless scene, final fight?
Oh, possibly, yeah.
We'll just put it in there. We can always whittle it off at the end when we get to the awards.
I like that.
Final fight. Best stripping scene, no, not really of significance, but best fighting scene, fighting just entire movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Best gun scene, there's no guns in this. Oh, there's the one gun that the woman shoots the guy in the ear, like, it nicks his ear. Other than that, there's, like, there's, you know, for a movie about rough kids on the streets and, like, you know, whatever, not a lot of guns.
Not a lot of guns, nope.
And then the only other thing, do we want to nominate, I think we can nominate maybe... Terrence Howard, best or worst non-Channing role, male or female? Do we want to nominate him for worst? Or is he not that bad?
I don't think he's that bad. I just don't like it, and I can't tell if it's the character or him, so I don't want to say it's bad.
So far through 10 movies, we only have Joseph Gordon-Levitt in Havoc.
Yeah, because that's when he plays fucking Malibu's Most Wanted, remember? Yeah. And he's like, yeah, we're going to fucking kill him.
As a second one, do we want to put Terrence Howard here or no?
Nah.
Okay. So just to review, fighting... 5 nominees, best of the worst, best soundtrack, best shirtless scene, best fighting scene. Oh, no, that's it. 4. Works
like
for me.
It.
Like, I'm glad that I saw it, but I'd never have to see it again. Because it's just like, oh, yeah, that movie's about where Channing fights dudes the entire time.
Yeah.
And has a love story that could be, like, literally ripped out. Like, it almost feels like the same love story from Ragazzi where, you know, Dito had the relationship with Rosario Dawson.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Totally the same thing.
The only thing is here, so last recording, next recording. So since we last recorded... our episode for Stop Loss. We did our Boyfriend Material episode of The Ides of March, which was
boyfriend
a movie that Joe really, really loved that I really liked.
I liked The Ides of March, yeah.
We did our Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift episode for Too Fast, Too Forever
Drift Podcast.
By the time we record... So we're changing things up. I'll just say the next Boyfriend Material movie that we're covering is Crazy Stupid Love. The next episode of this show that we're covering is Public Enemies, which you just guessed about. And the next episode of Too Fast, Too Forever is Fast and Furious number 4, featuring Liam and Ellie of the Nerd on Nerd podcast. So,
which we learned last time wasn't as bad as we thought it was.
Right. So I'm excited to see that one again.
Same.
But, you know, really, between the time we record this one and the next one, we're going to do, like, 6 episodes of Too Fast, Too Forever. Pretty much less than the next recording is just...
Hit the NOS.
Exactly. Anything else you want to say about fighting before we close up shop? We will be back in 3 months. Or maybe, maybe earlier. I don't know when Smallfoot will come out. Smallfoot might actually be in January. I don't know. We might do that instead of Public Enemies. Who knows? But anything you want to say about fighting before we come back in a couple months?
This was a movie that was much better than I expected it would be based on, like, what it felt like it was going to be when I first turned it on and what I thought based on the title. So I really enjoyed it because I loved A Guide to Recognizing Your Saints.
Yeah.
And so this one was like a kind of a watered-down version of that. And if you liked that one or you like Channing, this is a fun one. Or if you like Fight Club and movies that are kind of like it.
I think we both had Ragazzi as our number one movie so far when we ranked the first 10 last episode.
Yeah.
And this one, I don't remember where I have it, but it's closer to the top than the bottom just because...
I agree.
Again, not great, but fun to watch. And I think the lists are also like, is it a good movie for Channing? And I think he doesn't like necessarily have like really deep character moments, but like it's all about him. He's in almost every scene, and there's a lot of stuff here. He's got, you know, the love story, he's got the fighting, he's at the hustling side of it, so... If you like Channing, definitely check this one out. We could sort of spoil what happens, but you're not like it's just fighting. Like just go see him kick the shit out of dudes and get the shit kicked out of him. So
yeah.
So for all things Magic Mike's, you can go to cageclub.me or facebook.com/cageclub or at cageclubpod on Twitter and Instagram. Email us, magicmikes@cageclub.me. Send us pictures of strippers. You know, maybe this could be actually, you know, we're sort of scaling down because, you know, schedules are getting too crazy. We want to focus on Too Fast, Too Forever. But if we get a lot of email, we could do like a mailbag episode, because that's no work at all. We just read emails. So
down.
There's never been a better time to email magicmikes@cageclub.me.
And you have plenty of time to do it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, go for it. Let them rip.
You have 3 months to get it in here, so just let us know. Say hi. You know, what movie are you most looking forward to? There's a lot of good stuff that's coming up. So just, you know, let us know what you thought of Fighting. It's on Netflix. If you live in the U.S., it's on Netflix. So go check that out. And go to @CageClubPod on Twitter and Instagram and just, you know, say hi. If you're going to miss the sound of our voices, go check out Too Fast, Too Forever, because that's going to be, we're going to be doing those twice every 2 weeks. So go check that out. That's where we're going to be found for most of the time for the foreseeable future. So I'm Joey Lewandowski.
I'm Joe too.
And we'll see you in a couple months for Public Enemies right here on Magic Mikes.
Suckers think you're tripping with, yes, I'm the boss. 745, white on white, that's real.